Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Coast to Coast Combat Hour. I'm your host, Matthew Hawkins, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Ed Carbajal. Ed, we are approaching the holiday season. Some good fights last week coming up around the corner, and then we get the New Year's Eve festivities that we've all gotten used to. But how's it going out there, man? How you doing this week prior to Thanksgiving?
Pretty good, you know. Tis the season, it's fall, the fucking leaves are falling, my allergies are kicking my ass, but I'm here, ready to do this. UFC 295, I mean, as it goes without saying that the fighters performed well, the fights were exciting, the card was exciting, you know, even with the fallout with the main event and stuff like that. There's something magical about that building and that arena and the events that take place there, and it looked like the night was pretty good, regardless of what fights you wanted to see or you didn't want to see. So I'm kind of happy with that. 30th anniversary, you know, it was days before the 30th anniversary of the UFC's 30 years. And I did like that Oscar Willis of MacLife kind of brought up how I'm surprised they didn't make a bigger deal out of it. The UFC started celebrating that milestone in Madison Square Garden, in a state where they were once banned. It was a nice little FU to, you know, the folks that tried to keep them out of the state for so long. So it's always special when they come to the Garden. So, I mean, shout out to the milestone that the UFC hit. I know we shit on the what they've become since the sale to Endeavor, but it's still something, you know, it's still something you got to tip the hat to, you know?
Yeah, it's the mega machine that is the UFC, and you know, every once in a while though the stars align, it worked out. This fight card, like you mentioned, things came good. It was exciting main card. I'm not going to break down all the prelims, although there were some good ones down there too, but the name fighters, the biggest names, were on the main card for this event. And you know, most, they all delivered. Five fights, five finishes. I thought, great, you know, after 30 years, Mackenzie Dern did a great job of standing up to her, you know, proving my point of the Marco Huas versus Royce Gracie, as she showed basically UFC 1 jiu-jitsu level of striking, and was brutally beaten, picked apart by Jessica Andrade.
I mean, apparently she's because of all her personal issues, she did like a different camp that wasn't that serious and all that stuff like that. And I'm just like, man. Not for nothing. I mean, you're fighting somebody that's, you know, held the title and challenged for the title so many times. And we talked about Andrade's resume, you know, when we did our picks. So I was kind of surprised that it happened the way that it did. Not as surprised, because obviously we both picked Andrade to win. But you know what I mean? I mean, you called it with your description, was pretty much what happened. And
it was a dismantling top to bottom. Even me calling out, the only chance that Dern had was that she had a good jab going. She actually had a good jab going that night. So that was the one thing she had. She had a pretty good power jab. She just didn't use it that much. And whenever she got into big striking exchanges, it was like she became, you know, the flailing, you know, just not like somebody who doesn't look like a professional fighter. And there's not Valentina Shevchenko, you know, in the foot movement and the keeping chin tucked and that kind of stuff.
And that's kind of it. Like she's not going to get a high profile match like that for a while, unless she goes back to the gym and does some homework and, you know, fixes everything that's gone wrong. I mean, if the personal stuff that's happening, because she was saying during the media that week that, you know, pretty much her entire purse is paying for, you know, her separation and divorce from her ex. Is just like, dude, this is not good for you. This is just not good.
I mean, I feel like she's basically Ronda Rousey. You know what I mean? Like, Ronda Rousey came along sooner, so was able to kind of get to the women before they caught up to the, you know, we're just not going to lose to a, you know, head, you know, hip toss and a quick, you know, arm bar. I think that we've reached a point now, and once Rousey was finished by Nunes and Holm, I feel like that kind of opened up the door to, like, really, let's just strike this out. Like, you know what I mean? So I feel like Dern, somebody like Ben Askren, Damian Maya. I mean, you got guys that just were never going, just never developed that striking skill that is required in you know, the 2015 and on UFC to be able to actually win a title. Like, I just don't think we're going to see a one dimensional, and Dern is really as close to one dimensional as you could get in MMA, especially in the UFC. I mean, she could probably go be a Bellator champion, and that's not a knock to Bellator, but she's not going to run into the top four women in the world.
Mm-hmm.
She could go in there and fight with Alima Leigh McFarlane and you know, even Liz Carmouche probably, and they would be fun competitive fights. But I don't think she's, when it comes to Shevchenko, Rose Namajunas, Weili Zhang, Andrade, I mean, those women are hurting you. This isn't mm-hmm. like we're gonna even give you. I'm not even gonna give you a chance to clinch. Like, I'm gonna dismantle you from the outside, whether it's leg kicks or whether it's, you know, just hard punches,
yeah,
lightning strikes. I think and there's nothing wrong with just finishing out, being the highest peak you reach is mm-hmm. what, 3-4 in the world. I mean, it's not like it's a disgrace to her, considering her background. She got into the MMA game kind of late. You mm-hmm. know, had she started 8 years earlier when she was really running the jiu-jitsu scene and stuff, like, it might have been a different world. She would have got into a, you know, Winklejohn or, you know, one of these big camps and really mm-hmm. developed her skills while the sport was still kind of developing itself, especially for the women. She would have had a much better chance, but
yeah.
I think she would have literally been the Ronda Rousey of 115, 125.
Oh yeah.
If it would have been at the right time, but right now it's just, there's too many killers and too many good strikers. And the, mm-hmm. and the takedown defense is really what make, cause she's not a wrestler. She's jiu-jitsu. So you don't have, she doesn't have that. She struggles to get takedown against women that are stronger than mm-hmm. her or just have the ability to keep the movement and keep circling the cage, basically.
Yeah, and that strength definitely played into it, which is, I kind of saw from, you know, last Tuesday when we started researching the card to do our picks and stuff like that. But I mean, talking about strike, you know, it's funny, I was talking with one of the guys I trained with at my gym about the fight after the fact, and we're talking about just Pajeda's weird, like, awkward stance and style that he brings into MMA, and his short time there, he's already got two titles, and his striking is just, the guys, you always hear Joe Rogan talk about high level strikers. You hear that term in general, not just Joe Rogan, like any when people are talking about when some kickboxer comes into MMA and they just start knocking dudes out. Just the way that they fight, I'm starting to see a common thread. Like, if you look at him, you look at Pajeda, you look at Joe Schilling, I'm trying to think who else. These guys that have this stance where they fight with their hands down in MMA versus the way they fight in kickboxing. And I said to the guy I was talking to, I'm like, you know, they do that because they know their striking is better, so they're inviting a striking exchange by looking vulnerable. And that seems to be like Pajeda's whole gimmick, just to make these guys. I mean, Jamal Hill's already talking about, I'm gonna strike with him. And it's just like, dude, like, that maybe, left
maybe,
hand.
Maybe for a round before he gets put unconscious. But
that's it's like a weird, I don't want to call it a grift, but it's like a distraction. They just come in there looking very awkward, knowing that they're just better than, you know, the striking part of MMA is technically just kickboxing. Like, you want to just say it's boxing and boxing for MMA, but, you know, when you involve the footwork and the kicks and everything, you know, it's crazy. It's just crazy how he's been able to do what he can do. And I mean, we saw that coming. What we didn't see coming was a co-main event. I think we both picked what's his name that got knocked out by Aspinall. We both
picked Pavlovich. Yeah. getting back to the main event real quick. Mm-hmm. You know, before anybody goes, well, Pajeda is pretty much one dimensional. That is true. So there is, but however, he has proven that he's capable of surviving on the ground,
mm-hmm.
where, and against good guy, against Prochazka, against even Izzy took him down at one point. Blokovic. I mean, he went down against guys who are successful on the ground and was able to defend himself and survive. Whereas when somebody like Dern ends up in a striking bout, she's not surviving. She's getting beat up. So there is a little bit. It's much easier to survive on the ground than that be your way of winning a fight. You can talk about that. I mean, you can turtle up on the mat and almost not get submitted by, you know, somebody like you could go in there and never get submitted almost if you just turtled up and played 100% defense. Mm-hmm. You know, you could survive, but if you have to win by submission, it's a lot harder to obviously to get that win, especially when you're not going to win a wrestling match. So, but yeah, the main event, we were wrong on that one. Two big dudes came out swinging. Not a lot of game planning, but a lot of hard punches. Pavlovich landed two. Pavlovich landed some really hard shots prior to the straight shots. I didn't really take into effect Aspinall just being a laser lightning striker, with Pavlovich coming in kind of with more of that later career Fedor swinging and you know, kind of going for the kill with every shot, which I don't think is the best strategy, but it's obviously got him to this point. But I think when you start dealing with dudes who can take your head off too, you need to, you know, and I'm not a coach, I'm not a fighter, but I would think maybe stepping back, and if they have a rematch, maybe not be so aggressive out the gate, maybe look for your gap, you know, move, you know, your holes, and perhaps even try a takedown. Cause obviously that's all hindsight. He was, you know, a minute into the fight, I would have still thought he would have won, but it was just a matter of Aspinall me, you know, undercrediting him and him coming out and putting on a show, man, and showing some speed and agility for a heavyweight we don't see very often. So it's exciting either way.
Yeah, and it's crazy that he told Lorisenko after the fact that he had a back injury and he couldn't really train for it. So maybe the rest had something to do with his, you know, everything firing off better. Who knows? But I don't know. Now with the whole situation, you know, who knows what they're going to do with that, because they still want to do the Jones-Miocic thing. Miocic was walking in the garden looking like he had something wrong with his leg, and it's like...
It's called being a 43-year-old fighter.
Yeah, but...
In 5 years. I mean, yeah. That's the whole thing. Like, I don't even... I don't... They should have stripped... I was explaining to somebody this weekend, another shout-out to them. They appreciated when I gave them the Bellator shout-out. Same folks I'm talking about now, but, you know, I was explaining to them how I felt like the UFC dropped the ball on a chance to create another superstar. You had two big heavyweights, probably the two best heavyweights in the world, fighting off in Madison Square Garden, sold out arena, huge pay-per-view. You got the interim title, but to me, it was a perfect chance to crown your new heavyweight champion. Somebody who could be your fighting champion for the next, usually don't get long runs in the heavyweight division, but you could get a 2 or 3 year run out of one of these guys and then be the next GOAT for the UFC heavyweight, you know? So it's just weird to me that you kind of diminish it by being the interim, and you got Jones, who's going to sit out another year waiting on the surgery information, by the way. You know, it's funny how we got all the rumor about Jiří Procházka, right? Nobody saw a scar on his shoulder after apparently having the worst shoulder injury in the history of sports.
Somebody else was saying that too.
It was all over. I saw multiple people saying it. And I mean, let's be honest. Jones hasn't fought in 3 years. Did he test? Is he coming off of another suspension? I mean, how many is this dude just popping 6-7 times that we don't know? I mean, the fact that he's not fighting, that his excuse was that he had to put on weight, and then that took 3 years, and which is ideal, the same amount of time he probably would have had to serve if he would have had another steroid suspension, which I believe was 3 years. So that lines up fairly close. Now, I mean, now we're hearing McGregor not tell. There it is, Jiří out there. I mean, are we still now McGregor? They're saying July now. I mean, did McGregor pop again? I mean, at this point, who the hell knows, right? Like, they're not going to disclose it.
Especially that they're doing their own testing shit now with the.
I mean, why would McGregor fight in April? Dana White said he doesn't have to follow USADA anymore.
Yeah,
you know, unless you just lost all credibility and these dudes are, you know, Jiří was the most tested UFC fighter of all last year. Interesting. So a guy with supposed shoulder injury is the guy you test that many times, but he also would have been the most tested if he would have tested positive. And I'm a Jiří Procházka fan, so I don't even like the conspiracy, but it sure seems like things might line up that way when you start talking about massive surgeries and no sign of a scar. I mean, if I told you I had a massive shoulder surgery, then you looked at me and there was no wound or no scar. Would you really believe I had a massive shoulder surgery?
Yeah.
I mean, it's odd, but I just think the timing for stuff, but I just think it was a big missed opportunity to crown your next heavyweight and create a superstar. The UFC's got this issue where they got, you know, with this lawsuit going through, the money being distributed. It seems like it'd be easier to distribute it to one guy who's really carrying your organization than try to spread it out a bunch among, you know, giving the 10-10s a little, an extra, you know, $2,000 each. It's going to take a lot more. I'd rather give a guy $20 million who's going to be your heavyweight champion, is going to sell out Wembley Stadium. You know, like, it seems odd to me that you wouldn't. They really dropped the ball. For now, a fight that might take place in another year between two dudes that will have not fought for a combined, like, decade, other than the Gon fight, and they're going to be fighting for the heavyweight championship. And then what? And then they're going to relinquish the belt, and then we'll finally acknowledge Aspinall. I mean,
hey, done stranger things. So.
I hope Aspinall doesn't wait 18 months, right? He's going to defend the interim title, I'm sure, isn't he? And why wouldn't he defend it against Miocic? If Miocic has earned a title shot, he's going to fight John Jones anyway. So why? I mean, I get why he won't, because he has ass kicked and it takes away the money fight of the Jones fight, but.
I wouldn't be surprised if they just bank them all for July for the international fight. We can try to do, you know, something with that. I mean, I'm not surprised at anything they do anymore. This is the machine part of the UFC.
It seems weird. It seems odd. Mm-hmm. The timing of stuff, and I don't know. Like I said, I'm waiting for Jones' surgery announcement, right? That happened a month and a half ago now. Mm-hmm. You know, a month ago, I would think he'd have the surgery, or I would think we'd be hearing something. And I'll probably eat crow when he puts out a video of his shoulder, you know, his bicep being cut open. But, you know, but I'll admit I was wrong. But if we don't hear anything, it'll be kind of funny to see how that unfolds.
Hmm.
Yeah. Anyways, back to Bellator, another one where we have no idea what the future holds. But at least we know we get to Saturday night with Bellator 301. I think it's fair to say this is the end. I think we would be naive not to think it's the end when there's not another event scheduled. You know, at least the end as we know Bellator now.
Maybe they'll announce something on Friday. Who knows? But you know, it's 301, and as far as we know, you know, John Morgan spoke with Jesus, there's so many people that are in charge of stuff at the PFL, but he spoke with Peter Murray. I keep confusing all their names because there's so many people that are like in charge of things over there. But Peter Murray, who's one of the bigger names in their hierarchy, I forget what his title is, but when John Morgan talked to him, talking about the deal with them and Bellator, you know, he said it's nothing's done until it's actually done. Apparently, there's a lot of what do we want to call it? There's a lot of fuckery going on with these big financial deals when it comes to media rights and, you know, distribution and who's paying for the tentpole events and when they're on the road. So who knows what's going to happen? I know there's this, and then there's a lot of Bellator fighters we know from Bellator, like Juan Archuleta, are fighting at the end of the year in Japan at Ryzen. So for now, we got to enjoy this card.
Yes, we do, and it's a great card to enjoy. I will be interested to see, because how does PFL do that? Like, I mean, not to go off on a rant on this or talk too much about it, but if you take a Bellator event and a PFL event and you put them both out there, Bellator is going to outsell PFL for the live show like 10-1.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I don't think they're going to run Bellator shows, because that discredits the hell out of PFL when Bellator has a crowd of 9,000 and PFL has 900.
No, it's a,
because that's literally kinda what you get. That's literally what happens at these events.
That's kind of like the shot that I know everyone's the poor Daniel Yanofsky. That was the guy that asked an Ngannou question to Dana White on the post fight press conference at UFC 295. And you know, Dana White's cold told him he won the stupidest question of the night or whatever it was he said. But that's kind of what he was hinting at when he answered him. He was like, none of them can, you know, none of them can sell a ticket or whatever. But I mean, if you're comparing the two and ticket sales, Bellator is the one that's, you know,
way better than PFL.
Yeah,
way better than PFL. Number two in the United States, easy for MMA. I mean, you know, pound for pound, maybe one, because they had one event. But No, yeah, it just
yeah. They go to great venues.
Dana White thinks stupid because he's discounting the fact that the UFC fans would basically carry that pay per view and the UFC, it would take place in the Octagon with just a PFL logo on the friggin' post. It's not like it's not as if they're transforming the UFC roster into you know Mandalay Bay with 400 people in it. It would be a big event. It would just, he's just an asshole to the reporter. Cause the reporter reply to that should have been, if that's a dumb question, then you must be a dumb promoter. Cause that's the number one fight that can be made on this planet today.
And okay, if you don't, he's not trying, that's his first time getting a credential. He's not trying to
get it. I get it. He won't do it. But yeah, it's amazing to me. The follow-up from somebody else there isn't like, well, the quite reason that's come asked on, dude, is because you're a promoter. I know.
Anyway.
I'm wrong for thinking that.
Let's move on.
Yeah. Bellator 301 opens lightweight Grand Prix semifinal. Patricio Pitbull, Alexander Shabili. I'm going to go with Shabili to win this fight. He's kind of the dark horse coming into this tournament. Patrick, he has his ups and downs. Good fighter, in my opinion, just not a great fighter. I think he loses this fight. And the 24-3 Shabili goes to 25-3 and sets up with his position in the finals.
Yeah, that's literally what I have in my notes. Like, you know, Patrick's experience got great experience, but he's not Patricio, you know. It's not the same output and stuff, and the guillotine that Patricio had. You know what I mean? Like, there, it's not. I know there's a Pitbull brothers, and they both fight in Bellator, but I can't look past Shabili on this one. It's not the more dangerous Pitbull fighting, so.
Now, the winner of this fight was initially scheduled to fight Usman Nurmagomedov, who has been suspended due to some form of drug test failure. Have they said? I know that they're not looking ahead, but have they commented on who would be the fill-in in that fight? Was there any of the press releases or anything? Did you happen to see anything where is Primus moving on despite because it was a no contest now?
I didn't see anything that directly addressed that, but Primus actually put a post out the day that it was announced that he made it seem like it was gonna fall on him. But I'd have to recheck to see if there's anything official on it in that sense. But like literally within minutes that it came out, if you check, he streamed. The video should be on his Instagram where he said, you know, he thanked Bellator and the Athletic Commission for doing the stringent testing that. It came out, and then when I think Cole Shelton was the one that reported that first, and then Ali, Nurmagomedov's manager, came out and explained why it was 6 months and what it was from, because it was definitely like it wasn't on purpose. Obviously, it wasn't anything that he was taking purposely. It was something he was prescribed that he was told to take for whatever he was dealing with, and whatever was in the prescribed medicine is why he came up positive and him not knowing. So it was like what they call that no fault negligence. I forget the term that they used for it. So that's why it's only 6 months. And who knows, either they run it back again, or I have no idea. Again, I think this all depends on what Bellator's future is too. So
I also think some of it might depend on what happens in the next fight that evening. AJ McKee takes on Sydney Outlaw. AJ McKee was initially pulled from the tournament early due to an injury, but he is a 20-1 fighter who, yes, it would be a pass to the finals of a Grand Prix, but if you were going to have kind of that Daniel Cormier fill-in guy, AJ McKee would be a hell of a fight versus Pitbull or Shabili. And if McKee does win that, Usman versus McKee really is a hell of a fight. AJ McKee kind of got forgot because he had to be pulled from the tournament.
Yeah.
But you forget he is a savant at the sport of MMA and somebody who really, I mean, he could fit in there, and I don't think anybody would complain. You'd hear some people saying he didn't deserve it, but it would make a nice setup there. So getting to this fight, I got McKee winning. Outlaw's a good fighter. But I just think he's a good fighter. Again, I think McKee is a special talent. I think McKee wins this fight pretty much any way he wants, honestly. And you know, I hope some of these guys get through this, you know, clean. So maybe we get a chance of seeing some of these guys on the Ryzen card at the end of the year, because this card really is loaded with names of Bellator and what they got left going. Next fight of the night, who do you have winning that fight? You have McKee too?
Yeah, no, yeah, for sure, McKee.
Okay. Rufian Stotts, Danny Sabatello, rematch from their Grand Prix fight, what, year and a half ago? So, I mean, I don't know if you want to go first on this one. I think we're probably leaning the same way.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm leaning Rufian Stotts just because of how it went and last time, but it's the buildup is what's fun for me. You know, these guys come chomping at each other bits. I mean, I got to talk to Rufian Stotts when that whole thing started with them too. So obviously the fight makes sense in the marketability sense, the way if you're marketing fights because of the fun and the lead up, like the way the UFC likes to do these days, this is definitely that kind of fight. And if you're not paying attention to it, it's definitely worth watching. And the fight, they're both good fighters, especially at the, I wrote a whole thing about Bellator's 135ers. I think across the sport, they have Bellator has probably most of the better 135ers if you're looking at rosters, at least historically. And I like any bantamweight feature that they put on is going to be fun. But I'm picking Stotts.
Same thing, based off Alfred Feist went, like you said, and I just think he's way more well-rounded at this point. Sabatello has a great wrestling game, but I think he kind of he struggles when it's not going his way. So I think Stotts has the tools to survive. He's 19-2. He's still one of those guys. You don't know where his future, you know, he could potentially, you know, still take another big step up. I know he was the interim champion at one time, but I got Stotts winning this fight, and I think, you know, his career, I think he's got an opportunity still to be a mega star in the sport, with the way he talks, the way he fights. And
he's one of those guys that, you know, they're good on the microphone. He's good when they have him at the desk, and obviously he's great in the ring.
And he just seems like a good dude. Mm-hmm. Seems like a, you know, a good man, and just somebody, you know, friendly guy. So somebody that could really sell to a large audience. Co-main event of this event. Also, that first bout is a 5-round fight. So this card's carrying three 5-round fights, which you know, could be a long night, especially out there on the East Coast. But mega fight here.
I'm looking forward to this.
I think this is probably the main event.
Yeah,
based off just the names and the wins they're coming off of. Sergio Pettis, who coming off of his decimation of Patricio Pitbull, takes on Patchy Mix, who knocked out Stotts in his last fight to win the Bantamweight Grand Prix in spectacular fashion with a knee. I mean, this is a great fight. I'm going to pick Mix. I said after he beat Magomedov, I won't pick against him. He beat a Magomed, so I kind of let the Mix carry that. I think Sergio Pettis is a great fighter. I think he's, but I just feel like he's made. I felt like he got lucky against Horiguchi, but he proved me wrong against Pitbull. I just think Mix is. I flirt with the idea of Mix being a really, really somebody who will go down in history as a great fighter. Like, not just somebody we talk about for a 2-3 year span, but at 18-1, with his size, with the coaches he's training with now, like, with just,
yeah, I know ESPN featured him a few times from there, like end of the year.
Yeah. Cause it does, so. Does it have his age. I mean, he's what, late 20s.
Yeah, no, he's young. He's a young guy. He's a young man.
Let me see if I can pull up his age real quick. Okay. So he's 30 years old. He just turned 30 like a month and a half ago. So, right in his prime. I think that, you know, when you start looking at the records now, when you go to the UFC, it's not as easy. And that's not to obviously mean that these are easy, but at some point you're going to suffer some losses, but when your record starts getting up there, the 18s and ones, the Stotts 19s and twos, you got some guys that, you know, we'll get to the main event, obviously, with the records wise. But I just think Mix has the tools to possibly be one that we talk about for a long, long time past their retirement,
For
past,
sure,
you know, their fighting career.
And him and guys like him and McKee, I see them having these long careers that people are, you know, they're just, everyone's going to know who they are. I wouldn't be surprised if they wind up in the UFC at some point, especially with the uncertainty of Bellator future. I wouldn't be surprised if something happens that they get called up, or, you know, they you know, something happens that just one day Twitter blows up and it's like, oh man, you know, the UFC picked up Patchy Mix and AJ McKee. Just did something about the talent of these guys. Obviously, I have Mix pick too, but I have it with an asterisk because I want to say, because of the Horiguchi fight, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, Sergio Pettis seems to, we have the stuff from Bellator.com. Even the Bellator fans, 55% of them are picking Patchy Mix to win, but 44% are picking Pettis. And it's because, you know, obviously Pettis, you know, he came into Bellator with people kind of like, you know, kind of tightening their lips and kind of shrugging about him. And here he is holding the title. He wins the title, holds it, and defends it, and beats guys that are, you know, seemingly beating him. So I wouldn't be surprised if he pulls another rabbit out of his hat here, but it's not going to, you know, make me crazy, but I'm picking Patchy Mix to win, but I'm not going to be surprised if Pettis pulls another victory either.
Yeah, no, I won't be surprised. I'm done being surprised by Sergio Pettis, but I think there's a part of me that really wants Mix to win this fight because I think that his future could be really bright, and it'll just be fun. And like you said, you know, maybe the best thing to come out of the Bellator selling is that some of these guys just become a free agent and we get a big free agent pool, and some of these guys can get mixed around a little bit. And
yeah, these are guys, you don't put these guys on the Ultimate Fighter or whatever. If they're going to wind up in the UFC, just sign them.
Yeah. No, don't give me Mix on the Contenders. That disrespect and that kind of crap. No, these guys have paid their dues and they should be, I mean, they should be paid, you know, not only should, if these guys go to the UFC, be immediate to the UFC, these are main card fighters. You know, I don't need a, you know, prelim, you know, Facebook, I don't even know what we have anymore for UFC for all their millions of fights. But anyways, I mean, a mega fight. Wish it was at 300. It's the one fight I wish would have been last month so I could have watched it live. But hell of a banger. And you know, and if
you go to Chicago,
if this is the end for Bellator, as we know it, then, I mean, you're going out on, you know, this is the Pettis, you know, Henderson kind of go out, which is interesting that, you know, if he does a kick off the cage, then I'll lose my mind, you know, in the finale of
them. That's mind losing worthy. That'd be a nice, that'd be cool.
Wouldn't that be wild? We saw it. We saw it with Anthony when on the very last WEC show, which also I believe was the co-main event. I think it was. It might have been the main event. I know Safadine, I think, was on that card against Marquardt as well. But main event, Yaroslav Amosov, Jason Jackson. Last fight, I thought Amosov might have some issues. He was fighting Logan Storley. I thought maybe that his, you know, the issue going on in Ukraine, his life being all over the place, I thought might be an issue. And he went out there and whitewashed him 5-0. Jason Jackson's on one of the best runs in Bellator history. I don't think most people would know it, but when you look at the names, I mean, you got in a row, you got Kunimoto, who's a really good Japanese fighter, Jordan Main, who old school fans will know, Benson Henderson, Neiman Gracie, Paul Daly, and then Douglas Lima, all in a row. I mean, you've got everything there from Japanese style fighter to Benson Henderson to Gracie Jiu-Jitsu to Paul Daly's chaos and just pure striking. I mean, he's kind of beat everybody and a big list of guys. I mean, I'd have to see a better list of wins in a row for Bellator, because that's right there. That run right there is right there. So, but with that said, I'm not going against the 27-0 Ukrainian. I think I just I mean, he's 27-0. You don't get to 27-0 by fluke. You know, I don't believe you do. Not to this level where you've proven yourself after a handful of fights that you are what your record is, and your record is 27-0. That means you're a badass. So I'm gonna go with Amosov. You know, maybe I hate to say it's a grinded out another 5-round fight. If he has to do that, he might do it. But I could also see Jackson not being as comfortable taking a 5-round loss, maybe opening himself up and getting actually TKO'd just in a more of a desperation, maybe to start a round or something where he ends up in a really, really bad position. But I gotta go with Amosov. I just don't, yeah. I don't see how you could pick against him. Too good of a record, too good of a resume at this point.
Yeah, man. I mean, we're on the same page. Pretty much repeat of last week when we did 295, when we got all the same picks. Because I'm with Amosov. I think even with the resume that Jackson has built in Bellator, you know, Amosov is probably going to put a stamp on his own resume by beating a guy like Jackson. And if Jackson, obviously, if it goes the other way, if something happens that Jackson wins, I mean, that would make for a hell of a. The thing about Bellator's website, they don't, you know, we get these percentage picks. 13% of the fans are picking Jackson to win, and 86% are all for Amosov, like you and I. But fight night, I'm interested in what the odds will be on like the sports books. You know, I would say the ones that have the low percentages on Bellator.com are obviously going to be the underdogs, but you know, risky bets, I would say, especially with the guys that are on these cards. But the card is fun. Even the prelims, really quick. I mean, we're not going to do picks and stuff, but if you look at some of the names on these prelims, man. You know, Tyrell Fortune and Marcelo Gome is the headlining prelim. I know Denise, here she is. Denise Kelholtz and Sumiko Inaba. That's a fun strikers ladies match if you want to watch that. Justin Gonzalez and Timur Kizriev. Like there's so many great fights on the undercard. These are going to be on Bellator. Well, Bellator's YouTube channel. I think they do Showtime too, but I'm not plugging Showtime.
Kerry Melendez, one more
fucking shit up. Yeah,
5-0 in Bellator, going for 6-0. But, you know, she hasn't fought in a while though.
Yeah,
but looks like she, you know, trying to get one in before we know the future here. And I mean, yeah, good. It's good fights, and we lost a couple. Which I would have added even more depth. But
yeah,
you know, top to bottom, it's a hell of a fight card. I mean, it's better than the 300 fight card. In my opinion, we'll see
how the fights unfold. The thing is, man, I got to say this just because, you know, we were talking about the business end of it or whatever, and what you know, the backroom dealings with the whole PFL thing. The people that are really fucking up here is Paramount, CBS, Viacom, whoever. You know, Bellator's current owners, you just went through a writer's strike. I know it's settled, you know, as of last week or whenever it was, but that whole time, you know, if you needed content and stuff like that, you had live sports that wasn't affected by that, and it, like you're putting who knows what eggs you're putting in what basket over there, because I mean, everybody, even Netflix is talking about having live sports, some sort of weird live sport in 2024. So you got all these people that want live sports, and you're fucking up letting Bellator go. You know, shame on you. Seriously, fucking put money into it. When Kevin K was in charge of shit over there, he was literally, you know, do whatever you want, like it's just, it's insane that how stupid people are and how disconnected people are from what people actually want to see. It's insane to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't, it's not easy to make money, but sure doesn't take long for a bunch of guys to lose a bunch. It took till what, two, I mean, I don't even remember what number it was, 290 before they went on CBS. Dude,
how do you let go of a product that you already have that everyone else is trying to get? Literally Amazon added MMA to their platform. Fubo has added MMA. You know, all these other people have MMA, and here you are, you have, because Paramount, the company, so they have Bellator and they have Combate, like on the Paramount Plus is where you can watch Combate Global, like, and you're just gonna let it all fucking fall by the wayside. I don't understand it. Don't understand.
If we understood it, it'd be, you know.
Yeah, we'd be
making combat, yeah. You know.
We'd be out there making deals and wearing the navy blue suits and schmoozing and hugging the Rock and all these people, like all these guys do at the fucking cage side of, you know, just walking in with Donald Trump and Kid Rock and you and me.
Wow. Yeah. But, I don't even know. I don't even know anymore. But
I really don't.
You know, but the fights are good.
I'm trying to learn, though.
You know, like it's never gonna go back to the way it was. We're just gonna have to, if we're gonna keep with this sport, you're gonna have to just deal with it. And you know, if you choose not to, then
make a TikTok and swallow a fucking frog or something, and like, and then you'll be able to cover all the UFC events you want. So
it's. I think we should just sign off with that. folks, to follow the show at Combat Hour on Twitter, Coast to Coast Combat Hour on Instagram. Follow me, Matthew Hawkins, at MMA Hawk 21 on Twitter and Instagram. Follow Ed at Carbazol on Twitter, Carbeerzol on Instagram, and Old Head Carb on Twitch. Ed, so next week, taking the holiday off for Thanksgiving.
Yes. No podcast next week because it'll be usually recorded. It's going to be the day before Thanksgiving. I got to pick up some pies and prepare for the fattening of Thanksgiving. And really quick before we sign off, I almost forgot to plug. Remember, we had Dre Miley on the podcast a couple weeks ago. His fight is this Sunday, UFC Fight Pass. Anthony Pettis FC. We're talking about Sergio Pettis. Anthony Pettis FC. UFC Fight Pass on the 19th. That's a Sunday, I believe. And his fight against Evans is on there. If you want to listen to, we just had him on the show. He took some time out of training and teaching to talk to us about that fight and being a one-eyed fighter in the high-level MMA. So check that out and make sure you check out his fight this weekend.
That's why it's in Milwaukee. Sergio's fighting in Chicago. Yeah. I didn't think about that one, but it makes sense to be local and be able to make the show. So next week off, I figure we'll be back the following week, hopefully. And we get to look forward to the big bare knuckle Perry versus Alvarez, Rothwell, Duffy, and Rawlings and Fajea, and all the chaos that's coming up the next mega card. Big AFC card. So we'll do our research and hopefully have some info on that in a couple weeks. Until then, everybody, enjoy your Thanksgiving. We appreciate everybody who listens and gives us a second of their ear to the show. Mm-hmm. So enjoy the holidays, be safe, and enjoy time with your friends and family. And we'll be looking forward to getting back and talking to you folks in a couple weeks.
Gobble, gobble.